Hi there, and welcome to The Conscious Communicator, a show dedicated to helping you find your true voice, the nonviolent voice of personal responsibility and purpose, the voice that only you can speak. The reason that most of us fail to achieve our true voice is because of the false voices that occupy the mind. The voices of ego, consumption, expectation, opinion, and self-doubt rob us of our true nature, our true voice. Join me as we have a chat about inner purpose, outer passion, and finding your true voice. Communicator, I'm Rusty, and I appreciate you being with us tonight. That song was Whiskey by the Vilbillies, and our guest tonight is C.J. Henius, who's an emotional healer and also an integrative teacher who's worked a lot with addiction to help people to break free from some of these problems. C.J., thank you for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
It talks on your bio about being an intuitive healer, and you realize you had those gifts as early as 4 and a half. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah, it did start at about 4 and a half. My younger sister, who was born, had a speech impediment. She was tongue-tied. She couldn't talk. And by the time she was able to get help from teachers and speech specialists and everything, it took about 8 years. So her trying to communicate and tell my parents and other people what she wanted and needed was really debilitated. So I would step in. And I would tell them, because I just was developing that ability. The more I tried to help her, the more I developed the ability, and I became very much claircognizant, as it said. So mentally, I get the message, and emotionally, I feel it.
So we talk a lot about that in terms of some of these new children that are coming along, some of the crystals, or I guess they call them indigos, the ability
right.
to be emotionally intuitive and to also to feel and experience the world at a different level. So you might have been one of the first generation of these children?
Correct. And my granddaughter is the same way.
Right on. I work
yeah.
in elementary school, and we're trying like crazy to unleash the indigos and the crystals, because a lot of times we don't get the sense that they're even aware of their own power. I think sometimes it gets smashed at home, or they get told that it's not real and they stop doing it, and it's important if we can find a way to help other people through whatever means necessary, and that's really what this show is about. If any of you want to call in, toll free in the U.S. or Canada, 888-228-4494, or toll free worldwide, 877-489-6350. We're talking to C.J. Henius, who's an emotional healer. And you talked about some of the clients that you've worked with in terms of helping them to break free of emotional blocks. Is that, am I
right.
saying that correctly?
Right. Like an example would be, there was a woman that came to me, and she was so frustrated in her work because she just felt like she was burnt out at doing it, but she couldn't think of anything else to do. And as I listened to her talk and we developed a great rapport, we sort of hooked into one another's energy fields, and in doing that, I started to tune in to an area of talent that she had that she wasn't really thinking about. And I suggested to her, I said, you know, I just keep getting this picture of you being on the stage. I just keep getting you, seeing you, you know, telling jokes or something that's very funny. It's very lighthearted, very well receptive to people. I really like it. And I said, have you ever thought about that? So she went and tried some acting courses and was just thrilled at the results she was getting. Her teachers loved her. Everybody loved her. And she's right now doing auditions for animation voices and just already becoming successful. And this was something that she had just blocked, that creative aspect of herself in that way. And, you know, she just loves it now.
Why do you think that happens? Why do you think people get blocked?
You know, I think when we're very, very young, if we're encouraged or not encouraged, that has an important part of this. When people are encouraged really young, then they're adventurous and they try new things and they're very creative and nothing stops them. When people are not encouraged, then they have struggles with figuring out what to do, where to go, how to even hear their own answers.
You know, I was reading a book, it's called The New Mindset, and I can't remember the lady's name, a PhD, I apologize if you're listening. But she talks about the difference between a fixed mindset and a growth mindset, where a fixed mindset focuses everything on success and failure, and a growth mindset sees everything as a work in progress. And I think that's kind of what you're talking about. I mean, certain people have the ability to go out and try things and take chances and be willing to fall on their face and to be able to risk, and then there's other people who simply don't have that, the strength of self-esteem or whatever that internal component is that allows them to fall down. So they end up doing something that's convenient, that they might be successful in, but it doesn't give them a lot of, you know, personal satisfaction. And you talked about the lady and her opportunity on the stage. Do you have other examples of people that you've worked with that have been successful?
Yeah. There was a female. Again, I work with both men and women, but there's another female story here where a gal came to me and she had an addiction and we were talking about her addiction and I said, oh, you know, I can relate with that. I mean, addictions are everywhere and we're addicted to one thing or another and I can totally relate. And so we got on the same wavelength, and then as we did get on the same wavelength, she started to cry. And she said, you know, I just don't think anyone's ever understood before. And I said, well, I think maybe it's you who hasn't really understood that it's a natural thing to want to do something more and more until you get filled up. And I said, you know, you have to decide you're filled up or you're filled up. And she just burst out crying. And when she left that day, she felt so much better. And then weeks later, she contacted me. She said, you know, I've never had the desire to do it again. And I said, isn't that great? And I said, did you transfer? And she goes, no, I really didn't. And I think I just finally felt heard. And one of the things that I say on my webpage of emotionalhealer.com is that when people come to an emotional healer, they're ready to be heard. Previous,
right,
they're really not, you know, but they become ready, and then that's it.
What do you think about that, the word addiction? You know, I work a lot in recovery in terms of dealing with guys who are in the domestic violent court, and I have to, or I choose to, be a teacher in that environment, which I really appreciate. But the idea of addiction oftentimes comes up, and you know, also working in elementary school, you hear the, you know, the idea of ADHD, and I kind of
right,
make those two comparisons. I mean, I think sometimes, obviously, there's a chemical line that's crossed, and that person then becomes, you know, physically reliant on that particular substance. But how often in your addiction work do you find that it's an emotional block, or it's something that is a response to an unheard feeling or an unrequited idea that causes these quote-unquote addictive behaviors?
Well, usually it's emotional. I mean, I usually find that it's emotional or spiritual. Something spiritually has devastated them or emotionally along the way, and or someone has role-modeled to them addiction to such a point that they just think that's normal. I mean, that's what they grow up with. Usually, though, when people come to me because I am an emotional healer, they're feeling shame. They're feeling guilt. They're feeling regret for actions that they took, and they're in judgment of themselves. And they haven't been able to feel the feelings of that and really let it go and then embark on a new learning curve of how to be, what to do. Sometimes helping others is a great way to keep your addiction in check, basically, because you're giving and you're, you know, supporting another to have an understanding that you've already mastered. But usually I find it shame and guilt.
Well, I think it's, you know, and I agree with you there, and I also think it's difficult for a lot of people to move forward. I mean, the idea of present moment awareness and being able to live completely in the now, but so many of us are, we're trapped in things that happened in the past, and we find ways to continue to manifest negative results, and we blame it on that, and those things justify our experiences, and they justify the reasons that we pick up, or they justify the reasons that we do the things we do. You know, addiction, I think, is, and I think you're saying the same thing, I think a lot of times it's an overrated idea in terms of, you know, it's a behavior pattern that's highly ingrained, but the extent that it's, a disease, it might just be a disease of thinking more than just a disease of, you know, biochemistry. Do you think, you know, and the same might be true a set of cancer. You know, cancer may, in fact, turn out to be a disease of thinking.
Correct. I agree. I totally agree with that. And I think that sometimes because they don't have the education to know how to set themselves free, because I always think knowledge really sets you free.
Right.
And when they don't have the education about the addictive thinking, how it's like a cycle and goes round and round, when they don't have that information, they don't know how to interrupt it.
Right.
And people sort of, at times in their life, lose hope and they lose faith. And it's totally understandable why they do. I mean, I have a prayer group called healfromprayer.org, and people, it's a free prayer group, and people write in their prayers and their requests and their needs, and I hear it every day. And so I understand that if you lose hope, then you're just going to give up and you're just going to go for the mood change, and whatever's going to give you that mood change, you're going to do it. But after a while, that doesn't fix it either. You know, you end up feeling empty, and that's when you go and you look for someone to help you with it.
Right.
Because I deal with that a lot with people. I work with children and I work with adults, and I teach seminars and stuff, and so I work with all ages, but mostly it's women that will come and want to know what they can do to change their life, and they don't have that assertive energy that the men do. So it takes them longer to get to where they're going. I think now that the women are more embracing a little bit of their masculine energy and becoming more assertive, that's going to balance out. And so there'll be less women, and actually there'll be more men that then will be asking questions of how they can heal.
Well, I think the men have run into a wall as well in terms of their traditional roles. You know, I mean, it used to be easy back in the caveman days. You went out, you killed something, brought it back, threw it on the table, your day was done. And now these guys don't really know exactly how to operate, and we're being told that we're supposed to be more like women. And I think I came to an epiphany recently regarding emotions. It's not that we need to experience more emotions and be more emotional, like I tend to think of the feminine side of the energy spectrum. It's that we need to experience those emotions as opposed to reacting to them, and that's the difference. I think guys have a tendency to react to emotions, and women have the capability of experiencing them. And you know, that's what a lot of times for guys ends up being, that anger, power and control issue, the drug and alcohol issue, as opposed to on the more the feminine side, which tends to be the, you know, the lack of assertiveness, which you speak to, and so forth. You say you work with teenagers as well. Are they usually ready for your kind of work? Do they come to you ready for this, or are they sent to
you? Yeah. The younger generation is more open to hearing what they need to do, or what's a great idea to take on, or what's a pathway to go. They are so much easier than their parents and older generations. Children today.
I don't think most teachers would agree with you, but go on. I'm sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, well, the children that I, you know, draw to me, I mean, they're ready for what I'm offering, so it's a little
right.
bit different. And their parents are probably directing them in that way. Maybe a mother is, like, you need to feel your feelings or find out what's blocking you. But I have found that children are most receptive, and they're just brilliant. They catch on quickly, and off they go to the next adventure. And it would be good if parents could allow their children to teach them a few things in that way, really, you know?
Yeah, I think that's the difficult, you know, and again, I have this conversation all the time in education, is the idea of providing the adult, you know, I don't even know how to say this. It's like you run into a problem with a lot of today's kids who have very little respect for adults. And that is something that I think is part and parcel to the fact that a lot of adults aren't acting like adults. I call them the difference between an adult and a tall person. You know, there's a lot of tall people walking around. There's very few adults. But the idea that they do have some structure, or that they can learn something from the generation that's above them or two, is something that seems to be going away. And I have a tendency to want to learn as much as I can from children, but at the same time, also be able to, you know, and again, if you were in that give and take situation, I think it would be different. But a lot of times, especially with teenagers, you get that sense of, as we all did, all adults are idiots. They have nothing to offer me. And that's a very difficult place to be when you're in education, because the kids feel like that you really don't have anything to offer. So your experience on that level must be a lot different.
Yeah, well, I think it's just what you draw to you. You know, I'm an emotional healer, and I think I create my own reality and my own mindset. So I create that when people come to me, they're ready. Because I want to get them out on their own, you know, healing and doing what they want in life quickly. I don't want to have to see them forever in a day, because that doesn't make them strong. That makes them dependent. So I'm one of these teachers that they come to me, I give them information, I give them suggestions on what to read, classes, teachers, places to go, so they can advance. But the one area that I think the schools are lacking in, and I have friends that are teachers, and my daughter works at a university, I think the one thing that's missing is that in the younger years, the middle years of school, communication classes should be given to the children so they very young can learn phrases and sentences they can say that enables them to be more in a power position, yet not threatening their parent. A suggestion is, a parent says, you should do this, I want you to do this now. The child could say back to the parent, is there a time frame that you have that you'd like me to do this within? Or is this important that this is done right now? Could I wait till I'm done with this and then do it? I mean, they could communicate back instead of it becomes an adversarial thing. I want you to do this. The kid says, no, I'm not going to. Then the kid becomes passive-aggressive because those are the only tools the child has. And so I think what's missing in education in the younger years is communication skills, because then a child feels like they have some way of being heard.
Oh, I agree with you. And I mean, I hope you'll check out my website, which is schooltools.tv. I do a daily webcast every day that goes into right now several hundred classrooms around the country. But what we try and do is get those concrete communication skills in early, even the idea of using the word I instead of the word you, and
right,
turning that finger around and teaching them how to appropriately to be, you know, assertive as opposed to aggressive or passive in their communication styles. But again, you're also dealing with the brain in the amygdala stage of development, which speaks to the idea that for some reason, most of them feel like that they're going to focus their attention on peer relations as opposed to adult relations. And that push-pull seems to be part of, you know, Erickson's identification part of, you know, getting into that stage between 12 and 18 where these kids begin to really identify, you know, outside of their adult group in terms of finding their own identity. So, I mean, I think you struggle with a quick fix in terms of saying that you can just give them the tools. The question as to whether or not they'll use them, I think, is a question that's still out for debate.
Well, my idea is that if you're going to give them tools, that they do role model and practicing in the class. So that then, because these kids are so smart today, they will go home, like there was a tool I gave to a child, and I said to the child, say, what I'm hearing you say is, and then say back to them what you think they're saying to you. I said, that will help you. So the child went home and said to her mom, and her mom said something to her, Mom, you know when you say that, I'm hearing you say this. And the mother looked at the child and said, oh, I'm not saying that at all. And the child said, well, then tell me what you're wanting me to know. And that helped the child so much. It was amazing. And later when I saw the child, she was so cute, she came over to me and she bumped my arm and she said, I got it down. And I knew exactly what she was meaning. And I was so pleased for that. And her mother was smiling and she was smiling because they were starting to have communication and intimacy. Intimacy is just lacking today.
Right. Well, I agree with you. And I think communication, we talk to the guys about that all the time. If you're not satisfied in the bedroom, the problem is that you're not satisfied in the kitchen, because there's not good communication going on in terms of people figuring out how to feel heard and feel like they're being respected, and that translates into your physical relationship as well.
Exactly.
So I agree with you 100%, and I think you should continue to to do that, we need to figure out ways in education. That's one of my goals, is to find ways, hopefully with the transition that we've had at the top of the chain, we can begin to think about No Child Left Behind in a different way, because I'm a trained school counselor and have my master's in credential in counseling, and one of the challenges that we face is lack of opportunity to access the kids because of the current testing model. And that, you know, the requirements are accountability, which I understand, but the skills that you talk about are soft skills, and those are things that oftentimes will get left aside because you can't prove it. You know, you can't, hey, did you go home and ask your mother this question? Yes, I did. How did it work? Good. And then you check a box, and therefore our school is successful. And so I hope you'll continue to try and find ways to access that, because that I find that to be super important in development.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that it would be good if the parents had more information so they could use some tools, because, I mean, most parents are clueless about communication styles because they just don't have the education. In fact,
yeah, but let me interrupt
that
you there. That's kind of where the rubber meets the road, and it's something that we've, as educators, made the excuse for X number of years, and parents have drawn the line in saying, we don't want, when it comes to education, we don't want you to tell us how to talk or raise or whatever our kids, whether it's sex education or, you know, religion or whatever it happens to be. That's a taboo area when it comes to adult education. I don't know if that would, is your experience that parents are really open to that? You must be working with a high-end clientele.
Well, and I've been doing this for 28 years. Because I'm a pastor, I'm a metaphysical pastor, and I work with families and I work with parents, and they're all different that come to me. Sometimes they come as a family, sometimes it's the mother comes, the child comes. So I'm always looking at things from a little bit different point of view. I'm looking at it from a metaphysical point of view, that our mind creates a reality. They're looking at it from the same way. So they're coming with this attitude of, what do I need to know and understand to make it better? So it's a little bit different than what you're having to deal with in the school systems, because they're not coming to you in that respect.
Well, also the people that would go to a metaphysical church, I would think, would be more on the, to coin a phrase, a blue state kind of mentality in terms of what you're dealing with, as opposed to more of a traditional, kind of
right,
a middle America sort of religious belief system. You know, there's a lot to be dealt with when you have those different kinds of personalities involved, you know, because you really do have some deep-seated feelings about the way that children should interact and so forth, and a lot of those have to do with the way people are raised. I would imagine
right,
that the people in metaphysical churches are not your, you know, run-of-the-mill, average or minimum wage kind of person who's out there struggling, trying to raise their kids and pay child support and do everything else that's out there. It is kind of, I always found that interesting about philosophy or psychology anyway. It seems to be a first world, upper economic kind of a scenario for people that really have not only the wherewithal to afford it, but also the ability to understand what it is that you're offering them.
That can be true. We're out in Cave Creek, and right now I've been doing private practice rather than necessarily having a church going. I'm just doing private practice and giving retreats.
Right.
But I do think that Middle America is becoming more educated about the mind creates reality. And just from that alone, they can step into the next level. Well, if mind creates reality, then do I need to do anything with my mind to make it different? And then bingo, you know, you got an opening and say, well, I've got an idea. But I agree that in the church, in the school systems, it's got to be difficult for you. I agree.
I don't think it's difficult. I think it's, you know, in terms of what the task is, the task at hand, it's the task that we need to overcome. And
mm-hmm.
It's the thing that it's the challenge that faces us, and that's the one that you want to take on. I mean, it's like Obama coming into office right now. Good for him, but you're facing an economy situation that's going to define you based whether you do anything else in your presidency. If you don't get this economy situation taken care of, you know, it's going to be four and done. And the same is true in education. As educators, we have to realize this is the difficulty that we face and find ways around it. And that's where creativity comes in,
and
you know, finding ways to bring the information, because the information has to get in. And if it's just a generation or two away, again, my generation being born in 1963, to imagine a black president was, I'm sure, outside of the realm of possibility. But to somebody that's in school today, it seems like a given. Mm-hmm. And the same will be true of the kinds of ideas that you're talking about and the kinds of wisdom that you're bringing to people and the kinds of ideas you're trying to bring out. Do you have any last success stories? We're about to come up on our break. I'd like to hear one more if you've got one for us.
Well, I think one experience I had was a woman was complaining that she just didn't have enough money and she just didn't know what to do. And so I said to her, I've got an idea. I said, do you think you've got a good idea of where your money's going? She goes, you know, I don't. I said, well, why don't you write down for 30 days what you spend your money on, and I bet you at the end of 30 days you're going to have a better idea of where it's all going. At the end of 30 days, she said to me, you know what? You taught me one thing. I said, what's that? She goes, I need to budget. We both had a good laugh.
Well, that's reality right there. That's the truth.
Right.
So can you tell our listeners where they can find you?
Yes, you can find me. I have a webpage called www.emotionalhealer.com. And if you also are interested in prayer, we have a free prayer webpage of www.healfromprayer.org.
CJ, thank you very much for being with us today. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome, Rusty. It was a pleasure.
Have a great evening.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
All right, we're going to take a break now. Don, are you there? We're going to go into break, and our next guest will be coming back, Pamela McQuaid, a spirit coach who helps people awaken to their destiny and discover that spirituality is sexy. back to the Conscious Communicator. I didn't hear from Don, so I don't know if we're going to get Pamela on tonight. Our music was Delbert McClintock. The Cost of Living is the album. Midnight Communion is the song. Midnight Communion down 2nd Avenue. Really appreciate CJ coming on earlier and talking to us a little bit about blocks in our emotional well-being. But for most of us, I think those blocks are a little bit deeper and a little bit more complicated. And what I think that requires is that we figure out how to bring our unconscious into our conscious mind. We need to begin to raise our awareness. We need to begin to think about how we think. CJ said it so well. And if any of you want to join me, please call 888-228-4494. U.S. and Canada, toll-free worldwide, 877-489-6350. But CJ talked about the idea of unblocking some of those gaps, of bringing that unconscious voice into our conscious awareness. Now, how do we do that? See, for most of us, I don't think that we're a member of a metaphysical church. Most of us out there are not in a situation where we have access to $100 or whatever it costs to have a professional coach work with us. And the purpose of this show is to give you some of those tools. So what's the first tool? Silence. How often have you given yourself the opportunity to be silent? Our lives are filled from the moment we wake up to the moment we go to sleep. I don't know about you, but when I wake up in the morning, my first thoughts are things like, what did I do last night? How, you know, what's going on? And then usually a song will pop into my head. Ain't no holler back, girl. Ain't no something will be stuck in my head. It won't be something I put there on purpose, but it'll be noise. It'll be something that'll keep my attention for a period of time. And from the moment I wake up to the moment I lay my head on the pillow, and you know what? When it comes to addiction, I think one of the main reasons for people, and I include myself in this, in my addictive behaviors throughout the years, the main reason that people use those kinds of things is to quiet that voice at the end of the day. You wake up at 5:30 or 6 in the morning, your mind is talking to you, they're telling you everything you need to do, your day is planned, you need to do this, you need to get the kids here, blah, 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 I should have done that, I shouldn't have done that, my hair looks funny, my lipstick's wrong, do I look fat in this? You go to work, I wonder what my boss thinks. I wonder if they like my work. I wonder if that person sitting across from me is even paying attention. I wonder if they are upset at me or they're talking about me around the water cooler. We're constantly overwhelmed with thought. On average, 50,000 thoughts a day, of which the majority of those are repetitive. They're thoughts that happen again and again and again. We say the same things over and over and over. And if you're saying the same thing over and over and over to yourself, that should be considered a blockage. That's what CJ was talking about. A block is a place where you constantly run into the same question over and over. Should I be doing this? Should I not be doing this? Should I be doing more of this or less of this? Those questions are constantly overcoming you, then you need to answer them. Whatever the answer might be. Sheryl Crow said it the best. And I can't remember what she said, but it was something to the along the lines of, what is it, if you enjoy it so much, you shouldn't... I can't remember. If it's constantly on your mind, if it's a question you ask yourself every day, then answer the question or move on. But we're inundated with information from the moment we wake up to the moment we go to bed. Consciousness is just being born. We're 6,000 years into this. The universe is what? The Earth is, I don't know. We're 6,000 years into the idea of consciousness. How long do you think it took to evolve from being a water-based creature to being a land-based creature? I bet it took longer than 6,000 years. I bet there were some stops and starts in between. And for us, consciousness is like going from the water to the land, to the next reality. The next reality is being able to use this incredible gift to be able to take advantage of it in a way that will allow us to create the world and the reality that we want, to allow us to do the things that we want to do. How do we get in touch with that? Silence is the first step. And I will offer you a prime opportunity for those of you that drive, which is the majority of Americans out there. Or even if you don't drive, if you take a public transportation, turn the radio off. I say this as a radio host. Put the Walkman down. Oh, I guess that aged me right there. Put the iPod down. Take the earplugs out of your ear. Disconnect during your commute. Not the whole time, just for part of it. And listen. Don't judge, just listen to the thoughts that are in your head. Listen to the things that you're saying to yourself. What are the repetitive thoughts? What are the ones that keep coming up over and over again? Pay attention to those. Those are guideposts. Those are markers. They tell you some of the things that you're concerned about. Just like dreams. You know, we talk about dream, and they have dream interpreters who tell you whatever that dream happens to be and whatever it means. If, well, I have this dream where I'm being chased by somebody and blah, blah, and the interpreter says, well, turn around and face it. Of course, that's assuming you're in control of your dreams, which I'm not. If I was, every single dream that I ever had would be totally different than it is now. There'd be a lot more activity involved in there and cheerleaders and other, let's not get into it. But the point is that in your dreams, we feel like we can't become aware of what's going on. We can't turn on that reality. Although as a child, I remember doing it like maybe 10 times. The same is true of our cognitive thinking. Can you turn around and can you listen to it? Stop and listen to what it says. Don't judge it. It's coming from some place. Most of our habits and most of the things that we've created were created for our safety at some level. We thought it was the way to cope with situations we couldn't cope with. But the truth of the matter is that it's simply a way of dealing with the world that we may have found no longer works. In which case, as CJ said earlier, with her friend who had an addiction issue, she felt like she was filled up. At some point, we can jettison those. My favorite Buddhist saying is that every meditation eventually becomes a crutch. When we think about meditation or any kind of spiritual practice as being something that, you know, ultimately has value, but the reality is that even something that's considered quote-unquote spiritually important, can become a crutch. If we use it to control the world around us, if we use it in a way to make ourselves feel differently than we feel currently, if we use it in a way to distance ourselves from the present moment reality of what we're doing, because ultimately that's what it's about. It's about living here and now. When I talk to my brother-in-law, who's 55, 57 years old, 3 years away from retirement. This is a man who has worked his entire life in sales. And I have the utmost respect for this man because not only is he a nice human being in a genuine, wonderful way, but he is able to go out there on a daily basis and sell which is something that I think has got to be the hardest thing in the world to do. I mean, I sell ideas, and that's fine, but the idea of selling products and talking to people and facing rejection on a regular basis, it makes me sick to my stomach. But this man had a number. And that number was a number that would allow him to retire successfully at the age of 60 with his wife of 40-something and his three children of 12, 10, and 8, and allow them to send their kids to college and to live out the rest of their lives in comfort at the level that they've grown accustomed to. Along comes the recession, quote-unquote depression, of 2008. And he's looking at his portfolio that once had a number in it that allowed him to retire within 2 short years, and seeing that number cut in half, if not more. We don't know where it's going to go. We don't know what the next steps are. We may, in fact, be facing that kind of depression that my grandmother faced and still talked about to the very end. As I marry my ketchup bottles and I sit there and save my soap down to the last thing, I remember my grandmother saying, don't waste anything. We may be back to that time in a not too distant future. But my brother-in-law worries about the future. He worries about what's going to happen if. He worries about his kids and their future. And the idea is that in some way, shape, or form, if we worry about it, we're doing something about it. If we go into a global depression, if this economy crashes and everybody crashes with it, there's not going to be any idea of whether or not it's going to take, you know, $100,000 to send your kid to Stanford. We're going to be dealing with the difference between what do I eat today, where do I sleep today, and how do I get from point A to point B. I mean, we're talking about a significant event. But whether we worry about our children's future, or we worry about our 401k, or we worry about, you know, our addiction problem, or do I smoke too many cigarettes, or do I drink too much alcohol, or what is, the fact of the matter is that here and now, in the moment, that none of that makes any difference. Because unless you're being rolled up right now by a police officer for smoking crack in an alley, in which case I doubt you're listening to us on the radio, chances are your life is not at the end where you have to make that kind of decision right now. The truth of the matter is you got to get comfortable and aware of the decisions that you're making. And then those decisions can change. Silence is the beginning of the process. Figuring out what it is that you're worried about, figuring out what it is that keeps you awake at night, separating yourself from your thoughts and realizing that you, the awareness of the thoughts, are different than the thinker of the thoughts. It's taken a step backwards, or I guess in some minds it'd be a step forward. Consciousness is something that's just evolving. We call the show The Conscious Communicator, and I say that tongue-in-cheek because the truth of the matter is none of us are that conscious. We're just becoming conscious. This whole idea is just becoming conscious. A lot of us look to the stars, we look outside, we say to ourselves, I hope someone will come down and teach us a shortcut. Well, I hope so too. But my experience of life has been that there aren't really any shortcuts. We have to learn. There's very few really significant problems that are solved by anything less than the problem becoming significant. Our ability to deal with these problems is based on the idea that we understand what we're doing, how we're doing it, that we're aware of our actions, that we're aware of where that's coming from. The most amazing thing to me when Barack Obama got elected is because I began to become more aware of racist tendencies that I had in my own mind. Not in a negative way. I don't think of myself as a racist, but I had certain preconceived ideas about black people, about people of color. And on that fantastic, amazing Tuesday, I didn't vote for him, but I got to tell you, it changed everything that we think about when it comes to race relations. On that particular day, from a social perspective, I realized I had tendencies in that regard. Things that before then were unknown to me. I didn't have any idea I had tendencies in that regard. But now I do. The subconscious becomes conscious. Freud talked about it as being this long-term process of laying on a couch. In my mind, it's a short-term process of shutting up long enough so you can figure out exactly what it is you're saying to yourself. Turn the TV off. Turn the radio off for 5 minutes and sit there and listen to the amount of information that you are saying to yourself behind the scenes. Bring it to life. Give yourself the gift of silence. Because once you identify what the problems are, you can begin to think about solutions. And they're creative solutions to those problems. Maybe they're not problems. Maybe they're simply things that are things that you have to understand. Maybe that's who you are. Maybe that's how you operate in the world. Maybe you're going to be single all your life. Maybe you're the kind of person that likes to be, I don't know, raise cats. Maybe you're the kind of person that wants to do this or that. But you have to answer the question for yourself. I mean, finding your ultimate true voice, to thine own self be true, Rose Throkeld, 12th grade, Shakespeare, London, England, is the idea that you figure out what it is that you are here to say, what you're here to do. You're not going to be like everybody else. You're not going to be exactly like somebody else. And you're not even going to be close to somebody else. And unless these issues are causing you major problems in terms of the, like for most people, in terms of being arrested or things are, you know, falling apart all around you or whatever, where you need immediate triage in these situations, for most of us, these are simply questions as to whether or not this is who I really am. And if that's who you really are, then okay. We talk about diversity. We talk about accepting other people. We talk about the importance of that. The importance is that you accept yourself first. And the diversity that is unique to each one of us. My brother called me the other day. He was very upset that his son, 23 years old, had called our sister to ask for help with his broken down car. My father found out about this and called my brother to tell him that it was completely unacceptable that his 23-year-old son would be asking his aunt for help. He read my brother the Riot Act. And my brother called me because he felt in some way, shape, or form he had done something wrong. My comment to him was, Charles, you raise your son differently than your father did. And that's okay. There's no right way to do it. If you think your son is doing okay, if you think your son is doing the best that he can, well then so be it. Why do we question it? Why do we compare ourselves to other people? Why do we think that their way might be the right way? Have any of you met somebody that's found the right way? I guess you could point to people who are financially successful and say, oh, that's right. Or kids who have turned out to be really good and you say, oh, that's right. But what was it that they did along the way that made those kids successful? Do we really know? Maybe your purpose here is to teach your kid what not to do. Maybe it's not always so glorious and glamorous. Maybe sometimes we just have to accept the stark reality that we're doing the best we can with what we have, and a lot of people aren't going to accept that. Pamela? Hello?
Hello?
Pamela?
Yes?
This is Rusty. I'm sorry. We got you. I'm fine. I'm sorry. Thank you for waiting for us. I'm sorry we got to you so late. I was talking, and Don was sitting there, and I don't think he understood. We were trying to get that all figured out, but I really appreciate you being on with us tonight. So you consider yourself to be a spiritual coach, and you teach people about their destiny points and how to make spirituality sexy.
Yeah.
Can you explain that to me for a second?
Yes. Okay. So spirituality is really going within your heart and finding your divine connection with God. So having said that, to me, spirituality is sexy because it's really fresh, it's hip, it's a way to live with balance and peace in your life. So a lot of people have forgotten that.
You know, I've heard it said before that a lot of, they talk about women being attracted to men with money. And I've heard it said that it's not the money that makes people attractive, it's the fact that they have some inner sense of success, or they have some inner sense of, you know, I've accomplished things in the world, and they carry themselves differently. So are you saying that if you have a good connection with whatever you consider to be spirituality, that that also would allow you to carry yourself in a way that's quote-unquote sexy?
Oh, absolutely, because what happens is when a person begins to unveil the essence of their spirit, they start embarking on a journey, and they start discovering who they are. And like you're saying is so true, that's really sans the material goods, which represent a false identity. You know, it's funny, I had just written an article about this where I really explain in detail that everyone is caught up now with ego. And what happens in these times with all of the financial chaos, let's say you have financial breakdown of sorts, and you have to sell all of your things. Well, that's not very interesting, right? Then it propels a lot of people into a marital breakdown because their spouse's sense of self was tied into a particular lifestyle. So the key here is success in the spiritual world is not measured in dollars. It's measured in love, forgiveness, and compassion. And people that you see a lot, if you know spiritual people or not, they're filled with that radiance of energy, of peace, of joy, of happiness. And that's the key that attracts. You start living a life that you do attract. There's nothing wrong with having abundance. I think God wants everyone to be abundant. But within that, you have to understand that having material things, you can enjoy those things. You can love having nice things, but you can't be tied to certain things.
Yeah, well, that makes
sense.
I've thought about the idea of some of the people that live in Southeast Asia. They live along the rivers, and they build these very minimal kind of hut existences because every year, whatever they own is washed away. And I think that's an interesting lesson in terms of some of the things that we hold to be valuable in this society, which is, you know, and even that kind of success, and I appreciate that. You talk about the first steps to spirituality. In your idea of religion, what are those first steps?
Well, the first steps of spirituality, I've written a book about this, and it's really my steps in terms of how did I transform my life. I went through a lot of adversity in my life, and there was a major turning point there. How did I finally pull it around? And it's interesting. It's easy stuff. It's just that people don't, they're not aware. And a lot of times, even I think that you've got women, let's say, I think it's the same for men, but women tend to read more self-help books. You're reading self-help books, but you're really not maybe going into those sections where the New Age books. And I was reading all of these New Age books, and it dawned on me one day that, you know, here I am, a corporate girl at that time, thinking I'm getting all of these keys and everyone's really writing the same thing and this is how I've changed my life, but so much of the population isn't getting that because they have such a misconception about what spirituality is. The keys are such things as affirming the positive. There have been a lot of books about that. I think it's learning how to visualize success in your life, not just, say, doing a goal planning session every year, which I think is very good, but actually cutting out pictures and really getting a strong visual picture in your mind of how you want to live your life and how you want to proceed. asking for help. So many people pray, or they do, you know, talk to their girlfriends about things going on, but you just don't open up and say, I need help. That opens up just a huge energy wave. We've got lots of helpers out there, and you just have to open that door. I put in my website, and this is really three things that I think are important. You need to cleanse and heal your body, and that's as simplistic as really try to pinpoint your past pains and work through things that you've gone through in the past and heal those and cleanse your body of that stuff, because so many people, we've all had things go on. Well, if you don't move forward and look at the situation in terms of what am I fearing? Why do I keep attracting this type of person to me that's no good for me? You have to get into what am I fearing and how do I work out these problems? So many people don't even think that those things exist. They just think that's the way of the world.
But you're talking, and again, I said this to our previous guest, CJ, when I was talking to her, most of psychology and most of New Age philosophy is based on the idea that we've got this kind of time. And I would imagine, and I don't mean myself in this question because I'm single and I have a dog, so I have plenty of time. But I'm talking about the average person that's raising two kids, that's struggling like crazy. I mean, you're telling them to find space in your life to sit down and to do these things and to bring this into their life. And they're telling me that they simply don't have time for it. They just literally do not have time for it.
You're awesome. Rusty, that's me. Okay, now, that's the whole point. This is what I get excited about. Here I am. I am the lady who's married and has two kids. How do I make this all happen? The thing is this. You make time for what you want to make time for. And I really believe a lot of people who've hit, say, the middle age mark, and you've gone through your life.
What is that
you
now?
Have
go
a,
ahead. Go ahead now.
Well, yeah, I'll use me. Let's say I'm 40 years old. I think a lot of women hit that 40-year-old time mark, and you go, gosh, I've been married once or twice. I've got a few kids. I can't seem to make any relationships work. You've got all of this past history. So the thing is, okay, it's simple. Do you really want to go forward and change your life? Do you really have that desire? Have you maybe hit rock bottom or gotten so fed up with whatever it is? And it could be marriage. It could be financial destruction. It could just be living in misery in any way, shape, or form. And you look back on your life and say, how can I change this? Well, you make time for what you want to change. So if I really want to work all day and come home and watch TV all night, are you going to work anything out? Probably not. You know, there are ways to carve time in. You can get up a half an hour earlier and read. You can spend 15 minutes at night reading a book that could help you. Shut the TV off at night. Go for a walk. I mean, there are all these things, but people simply say, I don't have time. Well, I tell you, I'm a mother of two little boys, two toddlers. You know, I do all of this. I write books. I mean, so you make time for what's important, and I really think for a lot of people, there's that trigger. There's that place in your life where you've really come to the realization that I have to change because this, what has gone on in my past, has not gotten me anywhere that I really have wanted to go, nor has it made me happy.
How many people, as a percentage, is it like the bell curve? I mean, you've got like 10% of the people who actually hit that place where they can find their inner richness, or do you have, you know, do you think that everybody's capable of that, or are there just certain people? Because again, you know, I work in elementary schools, and I do a lot of presentations, and I talk to a lot of kids, and I don't know, maybe I've become jaded, but at some point I think to myself, you know, there's certain people that just aren't going to get it. There's certain people that just simply aren't going to take that effort. They're not going to get out of that chair. They're not going to go for that walk. They're not going to turn off that TV because what they're getting right now is satiating enough. And
that's right.
There's a certain percentage, and the reality is that. And I don't know, you know, again, I don't want to discount their journey. I don't really don't.
Right.
I don't want to, you know, I would think this show would be very false if it talked about the fact that their journey was any less important than the person who is incredibly able to deal with the world and the challenges they have like you have. I mean, you're an overachiever, you know, and that's something that a lot of people aren't.
Well, and that's a good point, but I do want to give hope here because I really have a positive view about this. I do think you're right. I think past generations, you know, the people that were really spiritual and really trying to change their lives or any of that, probably 10%. But the thing is, the world is changing. And as the world changes, and I believe you're going to see a lot more of spiritual people kind of getting that awakening piece. I tell you, I've been at this for a while, and more people will come up to me, say, after a speaking engagement and say, gosh, you know what? I really think my life is pretty great, but there's just something you're saying that makes me say there's just that other little piece that I'm not doing that I really could work on. And then, of course, I coach. So, I mean, there's a lot of people that come to me that are at rock bottom. But I have hope for the world right now. I really, really do. I think more and more people are becoming sick of their lives, they're sick of living in the rat race, and they want changes, and spirituality is the way. Now, having said that, you're absolutely right. There are people that will never be taught. And again, you never discount someone's journey because we're not here to judge. We're here to help the people that we can help.
Yeah, and I think spirituality is part of the journey for sure. I mean, I think it's definitely part of it, and also the reality of the day-to-day experience too, and
sure,
trying to find that. I think, you know, one of the things that I find fascinating is the idea of some of the guests that have been on here about that instant transformation and the ability to change overnight. And for me, what it's required has been a constant effort to change the way that I think.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really important. I mean, it's like, how do you talk to people? I mean, spirituality is part of it, and I think I don't get the sense that you're particularly spiritual in terms of a religion sense. Maybe you are, but I'm thinking about the idea of teaching people how to think. That's got to be so much a part of it. I was just talking before you came on, I was just ranting on my own about the idea of consciousness as just being an evolution. I mean, we're only 6,000 plus years into this process. You know, imagine how long it took to go from the water to the land.
Oh, right.
And I'm wondering if consciousness is evolving and how we teach people to realize that a lot of what they're dealing with has to do with the way that they think.
Right. It is. And, you know, it's funny you say, you're never going to hear me speak about instant transformation because, this journey for me took a long time. And maybe it's different for every person, but I was one of the people, and when you first came on, you asked me about destiny points. It was like this with me. People have destiny points in their life. There are certain things in your life that you're going to achieve no matter what. What happens is there's a path, and I call it the golden path. There's a path that hooks these destiny points, and within that path, you can stay on a golden path. Now, the whole point is we're here to learn. So the path isn't always easy. It can be bumpy and rocky, and we're here to learn lessons, and that's not always easy. But if you stray from that path, you really start getting into the brambles. And what I mean by that is that's a lot of times when you really kind of get out in darkness and you're really making poor choices, you're not following your inner guidance whatsoever, and I've been that person. Addictions happen. You know, it can be drugs, alcohol, shopping addiction, sexual addictions, you know, whatever it is, different things start occurring. And when that happens, it's like a snowball effect. It's harder and harder and harder to get back on the golden path. The thing is, if you kind of stay on that golden path, life still can be challenging. I mean, we have lessons to learn. But what you don't do is you continue. You're starting to fill your heart with forgiveness and love and compassion, and the challenges become easier and easier and easier. Well, for me, that transformation took a long time, and life throws you curveballs, you know? So, I mean, that's to be factored in. But if you really do the work, I have found in past years, the curveballs that I'm getting thrown kind of bounce off me. It's not like it was because I know where I'm at. I'm very balanced, and I think that is the key to stay centered and balanced within your life.
How old are your kids?
I have a 5-year-old and a 2.5-year-old.
We're
going
to have this conversation when they get into their teenage years.
I know it.
We'll be able to talk about it then. So I'm still balanced.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, well, that's the purpose, I'm sure. But the ideas that you talk about are important, and, you know, I think that ultimately what we're trying to do is figure out ways to to manage our way across a lifespan, because you can't really judge a person until they're gone, because you really don't know what they're going to do in those last few days. So
that's right.
I mean, life
it's
is really a journey.
Uh-huh.
It's really a journey that we have to take, and we have to give our full effort to. But for most of us, like I said, I still think there's so much of the evolutionary part of it in terms of people. And a lot of people talk about 2012 as being some sort of a breakthrough point. And consciousness will evolve, and people will start to understand that it's our responsibility to control those thoughts and control the way that we act in the world. But I don't think that a lot of people are aware of that right now. So you're kind of, you know, you're on the cutting edge of what's, you know, being talked about. And again, I don't guarantee you that most people can afford this time, or they can afford this level of opportunity, because I think a lot of people just think that they can't do it. And I don't mind that. I don't think it's a negative thing. I think it's just a matter of us as teachers being willing to meet them where they are and trying to find ways to help them through.
That's right. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. You know, you're going to teach the people that want to be taught, but within that time frame here of these years to 2012, you know, a lot of things are going on. And again, I really choose to look at it as all very magnificent in its own way, and spirituality will open up, and there are people even now that think, gosh, no, I don't have time for that. You know what? Life changes, and we have life lessons, and maybe when I was in my early 20s and you said, hey, what about spirituality? Well, in a way, I was always that person, but no. You know, I would have said, what, are you crazy? I mean, you know, I grew up Catholic, and even then, as a young girl, I was questioning different things, but you know, you live your life, and in your 20s, I was in college, and I was just sort of a free spirit doing my own thing, but life catches up, and so the people today that may think, you know, no, I don't have time for that, or that's not interesting, there may even be one event in their life that may trigger just even a sense of, even if you have a person that has never read before, to get that person to open a book and start opening their mind a little bit, and learning just the basics of how to change how they're thinking. I mean, that's huge success for maybe someone who's never done anything. So there are levels of success, and I think each step along the way is an important one for people. And I do. I hold great hope in my heart because I really believe that a lot of great things are going to happen in the next 5 years.
Good. You know, I was raised Catholic as well. It's funny how many people that come on the show have been raised Catholic. It's fascinating to me.
Isn't that interesting? I know it. I've met a lot of people in this kind of work that also were raised Catholic. So it is kind of an interesting thought, isn't it?
Yeah. We never get rid of it. It's definitely part of you and who you are, and it's kind of like being Jewish. It's more about kind of like how you're raised as opposed to your religion. It has less to do with religion than it does to be, you know, just to be part of that whole environment. So.
Right.
Well, I really appreciate your time. I appreciate you coming on. I'm sorry that we were late, and thank you for staying for a few extra minutes. How can people get a hold of you if they want to?
Yeah, www.spiritualityissexy.com.
Cool. Well, good luck with your work, Pamela. I really appreciate you talking with me tonight, and I hope you continue doing what you're doing for a long time.
Thank you, Rusty. It's been my pleasure.
Have a great evening.
Uh-huh, you too. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you guys very much for joining us tonight. Don, thank you for keeping us on a little bit longer. I appreciate it. I know we went a little over time. I want to take you out with a little midnight communion from Delbert McClintock. Have a great evening.
We've come to the end of another hour here at the Conscious Communicator, and I can't thank you enough for joining me on this journey. Your phone calls and emails are greatly appreciated, and if you like what we're doing, please invite a friend to join us. This is a conversation that needs many voices, and as we open up the possibility of conscious communication to more and more people, the results will be a freeing of the true self from the burdensome armor of ego, and a flowering of the potential that is available to all of us. Until next time, peace out, travelers. The rest is still unwritten.
Welcome to Windows into Eternity with Al Mean. This hour you will receive powerful revelations of a world where mystery and miracles are commonplace. Here's your host, Al Mean.
Storable food. Storable food. HipUSA.org has an inexpensive...
Welcome to our listeners. It's a delight to be with you, and we hope that today is going to be a great show because I'm very fortunate to have Rogier Chardet back today with us, and he has got questions to ask me, and it actually always is just a lot more fun with another person on the show. And so, Rogier, very welcome. I'm very glad you're doing this for us.
You are welcome, and I just wanted to add two things about it because, you know, you asked me yesterday if I wanted to do this, and I haven't been on radio with you for a while. So I said yes, and then after I decided that, I realized it was really, you know, a good thing to do because, first of all, a number of our fellow students had been asking me about it and been expressing their appreciation. So I thought, yeah, I should probably go back on. And then also I realized last night when I was thinking about it that really it's kind of interesting what we do here because I realized that we could also look at these shows as really a kind of creative space, you know, which consists not just of the live listeners and those who listen to the show at the designated time, but also really anyone will ever hear this in the archives. And it's like really, there's something magical about it, like especially because, you know, you tend to access the what was formerly known as the unknowable a lot. So yeah, I think it's going to be interesting.
And, you know, also, folks, we're always taking a little peek at which of our archives you find the most interesting. And that, as Rogier says, helps shape the creative process. So we always go back to those topics. We've noticed, for instance, on our YouTube, haven't we, Rogier, that people are very interested in the 2000, well, actually in prophecy, but on our blog diary. We're having the one specific blog entry translated into Russian, into Danish, into French, into German, because of how many hits just this one blog entry has, and its prophecies for 2009. So how do they get to our blog, Rogier, just to remind them?
The blog, you mean the address?
Yes.
The address is almin.typepad.com, and the YouTube address is something that's easily accessible from the Spiritual Journey site. It's on my page there. Actually, the blog can be accessed from the Spiritual Journey site very easily as well.
All right, and Now, what else do we have that we need to give them addresses, and then we'll get going with our questions?
Well, that was actually one of the topics I would want to bring up, because we, of course, have the many new websites, which, as far as I know, are all linked from Spiritual Journeys website. So, you know, all the specific websites created that's in which you convey newly accessed bodies of information. And then we have YouTube, we have Dailymotion, both of which are video sites, although we haven't really gotten around to doing a lot of video lately. But
well,
we've
been putting up 14 websites that's been a little busy.
Yeah, that's true. But we'll get to that soon, and then the intention is for us next year, I think, starting from January or so, to seriously get into the recording of video tutorials and audio tutorials. And we've got some very juicy topics while we're lining those up for that, so that will be exciting. And well, I mean, you're obviously part of
that. Well, I usually don't know the topics even when I go to conventions. They sort of put my coat on, shove me out the door, and tell me what I'm speaking about.
Well,
so whatever you decide, I'm good with that.
Yeah, well, that's the preferable state for you to be in when we make these things, and it's always the most dynamic. And yeah, personally, I'm very, very excited about what I feel should really be the first proper video project, which is about ISIS and Freemasonry and interior government and divine architect body. So that's very interesting. I've been thinking a lot about that. But then in terms of websites that we are working on currently, besides the ones that you've been writing, is first of all, I'm going to create really your Facebook page, which currently I found that there actually was such a page existing already, and Facebook is social media page, quite a popular one, like MySpace, but not so sleazy. And so it was interesting for me to find that I'd created a page for you in January there, but it never published it because it didn't feel like the right time. And a few weeks ago, actually, I think it was last week, I went to take a look and I noticed that there was a page for you on Facebook, and there wasn't much on it, but there were a number of fans already. And, well, to make a long story short, but I found that it was really the Malaysian team that had created that page, and they were kind of holding the space for the right time for basically us to take it over, because they found that there wasn't such a page and they thought there should be, because it's very...
Oh, that's so precious of them. That's our brothers and sisters that are studying with us in Malaysia. That is wonderful.
Yeah, it was very gracious, so...
Yes. Well, you know what, if I can, I just quickly, because I don't want to lose a whole quarter, but we do have some housekeeping things we wanted to fill you folks in on. I quickly want to actually run down our websites, and I hope I don't skip any, because I've been writing literally a website a week now for months. But we have got almeenhealing.com, arubasirina.com, which is our interdimensional photography and sound site. And you can get all these links on our home website, which, of course, you know, is spiritualjourneys.com, the www.spiritualjourneys.com. We've got spiritualhealingforanimals.com. We've got ascendedmastery.com. We have ascensionangels.com. And I might just add that all of these sites have phenomenal interdimensional photographs on every single site. And we've started to ask each class that I give at the end of the class, the people tell the miracles that happened during that class. So we've been adding to them every time I have a class. So because we have miracles and interdimensional photographs, it would seem, every class, and we've been adding those in. So then we have got the earthchronicles.com. That's ancient Gaia information. We have incorruptiblewhitemagic.com. We have got the astrology of Isis.com. We have got Wheels of the Goddess, which is the divine architect, creative principles. Then in addition to that, we have got the alchemy. It's the alchemy website. That's the divine, that's the Wheels of the Goddess.com. That's about alchemy, sacred secrets of the alchemy. And then we've got a divine architect, creative principles. And I just know I've missed something here. Let me see. What did I not say? Here's what I did not say. AncientShamanism.com. The shamanism that predated that which we know as modern shamanism. And WayOfTheToltecNahual.com. I think I've got it. But we also have LifeMiracles.com under construction. And a few others. But I think we've got it, and you can go to our website. And here, we just have 5 minutes left in this quarter, so please give me a question, and we'll get some information into this portion of our show.
Okay, well, then I'll still combine the question with a housekeeping point, okay. Because we really want to, I think some people may be asking, why are you on Twitter, and how did this come about? And this is something that's only been the case since a few days, but I thought it'd be nice to explain that a little bit.
Well, first of all, I need to explain to our listeners that I am not computer literate. I own several computers that, you know, is used around the house and in our office here in Newport, of course, but I don't have any idea even how to turn them on. So I'm not computer literate, and I don't know that these things exist. Our blog diary has been the most massive success. The reason being that when we have a pod, and we're having a Christmas pod, we just have a few places left on our Christmas pod, but we have a Christmas pod coming up. And for instance, when that 5 days that we spend together sharing presents, sharing fireside chats, dancing together, studying together, crying together, at the end of those 5 days, it's a huge feeling of loss when we actually have to say goodbye, particularly because the growth is so massive during 5 days. And this walking day by day with my sharing the metaphysical things as they happen day by day is a wonderful way for us to keep in touch. And I have had so many of my students say, this is my lifeline. I come out of work and the first thing I want to see is, what happened? What insight is there? What can I do to change something today? But the part that they're missing, and this is by popular request that finally something like Twitter came to my attention, and when I was in Ireland recently, they said this would be a good idea. Please, can you do this? But what it has to do with is that I'm giving the metaphysical insights of the day, but it still isn't a way of sharing the day that's my personal day. For instance, we're scheduled to do 4 hours of pre-records today. This morning, I got the very strong message that as the major way showers of the world, we dare not allow work to be a tyrant in our lives, or tyrants will arise globally. So, you know, like Mr. Mole and Mr. Rat said on in a charming little book, The Wind in the Willows, when they were whitewashing the house or the fence or whatever, hang whitewash. They're going off to the river. So it just might be today that's one of those days we just don't do our pre-records. And then, you know, the motivation behind it and those little personal bits, that's what's going on Twitter. And it's just a more intimate way for us to hold hands, not just metaphysically. The blog does the metaphysics. This is a more intimate thought sharing. And so that is finally why we decided to do that. Let's just go and have a quick break. And when we get back, we are going to get knee-deep into these questions. We promise.
The Gift of the Unicorns is now available from Al Mean. The magical book answers a question: do mystical creatures like the winged horse Pegasus, mermaids, and giants truly exist? What is their roles, and how can they be called upon for assistance? In their own words, the unicorns reveal where they went during the ages of darkness, their heroism in preserving purity and innocence, their golden shoes, and the secret mission they undertook for the mother of all creation. To receive your copy of this amazing book of sacred secrets, The Gift of the Unicorns, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016 today. The world of mysticism has yet another reason to rejoice. Al Mean has authored another manuscript of profound knowledge. It's entitled Opening the Doors of Heaven, Revelations of the Mysteries of Isis. Through a time travel tunnel linking Ireland and Egypt, Isis has sent a small group of masters to prepare for the day when the mysteries would once again be released to the world to restore balance and enhance life. They established the Order of the White Rose to guard the sacred objects and the secrets of Isis. In an unprecedented event heralding the advent of a time of light, these mysteries are released for the very first time. Packed with truly thought-provoking information, this book is bound to have an indelible impression on not only the reader, but on global New Age philosophy. To reserve your copy of this groundbreaking work, go to www.spiritualjourneys.com or call 502-499-0016.
Welcome back. We're in our second quarter of our show. And, Ruchir, what would be your first question?
Well, when I was writing down some notes for the questions today, I found that really just the problem was that half of the words and phrases, you know, used in, that I might use in a question to you, it seemed like a lot of things are currently up for revision, and it seems a lot of things are uprooted. For example, you know, I wanted to ask something about certain songs that I've been hearing a lot in my head, and conversely about, for example, just reading the environment, but currently it's really not clear anymore if this, you know, how this works. Previously, it was very standard for us that, in terms of relating as Nagwals, that I would sort of tap into the unknowable and I'd hear certain songs or something like that, and I'd tell you, and then you would really analyze and find out what it means, and you would then have certain, for example, like a sharp pain in your foot or something, and then it would mean something. But now, it's every time I hear a song, I'm not just wondering, well, what does it mean? I'm also wondering, should I even be hearing this anymore? Because are we still reading the environment in the same way?
We are reading the environment in the same way, if that's what you're asking. Your question's not quite clear to me.
That's the question, because I asked you about this on your blog. You essentially seem to say that this idea of the environment as a mirror is a construct which perpetuates illusion. Hence my question, are we still reading the environment?
We are reading it, but we're not reading it as a mirror. But there are a couple of things around that. Let me just try and do the best I can with that, because I did promise you can ask anything you want, and I'll dig in, you know. We're dealing with the fact that when the environment mirrors to us things that are lacking inside ourselves, anytime there is a mirroring going on, you are in some way connected with ego identification. Because ego identification has walls around it. One thinks of yourself as your little bundle of feelings and thoughts and physical, and you see life like in the, as a reflection on the walls of your chrysalis. But at the same time, we have some very bad static on the phone. There's this feedback coming in like a loop. But anyway, if we can just take a look at this. So it's not as a mirror that it functions, because as long as the environment is a mirror, then life, and we have been saying that's a mirror, but the cosmos was in a form of identity consciousness. It looked only within its own walls. The massive changes that have happened, because what our listeners might not be aware of, is that we have actually stepped out of the place where life has been a dream within the infinite being. We have come through the multiple stages of dreaming, and very soon we'll have that information on station 3 on BBS of life as the stages of dreaming and so on. But as we came out of the dream, we can recognize things in our environment, but mostly what we're doing is, instead of the environment being a mirror, we're telling ourselves things. For instance, when you've always been very good, since I've known you, at hearing songs that give you your next step. And when you do that, it's you yourself telling yourself something. It's not that life is environment is a mirror anymore. So yes, you can still get lessons from your environment, but not that's the only place where you can look. There's more effortless knowing coming from inside. It's self-guidance, not mirrored guidance.
But when you would say, well, it's self-guidance and not mirrored guidance, I get that, but at the same time I wonder, well, to what extent would that be a question of semantics and ultimately still involving the same mechanic, namely, I think, a somewhat linear process of indication and then insight, or hopefully insight, but still, I wonder how it essentially would differ from using the environment as a mirror, other than in our description of it, you know?
Here there's a couple of other factors that's in there, and I understand why the answer feels incomplete. It does to me as well. But part of the factors that I did not discuss is that for the last months, there has been day by day by day the elimination of what is called the petty tyrants of the cosmos. The Infinite Mother was in the dream. Now we're out of the dream. We're really dealing with an androgynous being that's called the Infinite. But, you know, for the sake of habit, because for years I've worked on behalf of the Mother with those major way showers that come our way, like our listeners, that I'm so used to calling the Infinite the Mother, so allow me that luxury for just a little bit more so I don't have to think about it. But here's what we have. There have been multiple programs put in place. The Mother in the dream went into the very deep, deep, deep stages of dreaming so that it could be a way to bring the creations of her dream out of the dream. This was very recently accomplished, and if the folks look at our blog, it makes for very interesting reading, and we have a title so you can go right to what you want to see. But the petty tyrants, one of the petty tyrants was the environment. It tells us, get this at this moment, we get it at that moment. Instead of our inner intent dictating the journey, the mirrors became part of the dictator. And this was done through multiple ways. It was done through a mechanism put in the center of the earth. It was done through the building blocks of life. It was done just many different ways, matrices, the matrices of existence when they were there. It was done through grids. These things have been eliminated, and again, Station 3 BBS is a very, very good place to go for that. However, what we're looking at is that with those dictators gone, the environment doesn't tell us when to get what we need to get. It's coming from inside. Our inner knowledge says, in my self-guidance, this is the next step I need to know, and then the environment responds. So in the one instance, it's a cause, and in the other instance, it's an effect.
And I guess that is then a situation which also parallels the newly accessed body of the Isis astrology. We should probably talk a little bit about that, because well, I know you have a lot to tell about it. My main question about it is that you say it's the Isis astrology, yet does that mean it's a new thing? Because if we're looking at when Isis was around, it seemed that the traditional astrology, in terms of which planets are around the Earth and so forth, would actually legitimately have held sway, don't you think? Or how does that work?
Well, what I believe you're saying is that the heavens were different when it was written. But let's go to that, because what Rogier is pointing out is a very, very valid issue. This is exactly the way, because one of the petty tyrants of the past that told us how we will feel, how we will deal with communications, how we will deal with relationship at a specific time was astrology. And astrology, as an external dictator that tells us how our life is going to be day by day, so we study it and basically that's the way it is, that has been completely changed. There's two reasons for it, and let me just fill that in, and then I'll get to your final question, Rogier, because we are 4 minutes before our break. Number one, it's exactly the point that the astrology, the new astrology that has come in, is self-determinative. When I'm saying that our environment no longer dictates what we have to get when we have to get it, that's because our growth is self-determinative. And it's when we decide we want an answer on something that then the environment provides it. It's when we decide that there is a specific quality that we need to enhance in our life, that with the Isis astrology, the astrological influences provide it. In both instances, it's the epitome, the height of self-empowerment, self-guidance, and self-determination. We have on the astrologyofisis.com, and you won't find that up quite yet. It's due to be up, I believe, the end of November. But the astrology in end of November 2008 for those folks that come into our archives during 2009. But the material that's being prepared on the Isis, the astrologyofisis.com website, half of it is the astrology of Isis, which, yes, it's a question, is it new or is it old? But the second half of it deals with 144 self-wheels, self-guidance, self-empowerment, etc. And it is a tremendous body of self-empowerment through the power of the source of creation. And so when that is up, and you'll find some of these self-wheels, they're absolutely exquisite. They're like mandalas that you can use on a day-by-day basis. They are on our blog, but the full set will end up on that website. Is it new? Is it old? The Isis material dealt with record-keeping so that we would be set straight as to the facade and the perpetrators that have happened in the book Opening the Doors of Heaven, Revelations of Isis. Then there is a new body of information that has been coming out of the Isis libraries simply because it's the first time that I've been instructed to go back in there and take a look. So a few weeks ago, to get the Isis astrology and the power of the source of creation, which is those 144 wheels and how to work with them, you can use them as a teleportation device and as a manifestation device. I had to go back into the libraries. So some of her information is about the past and some prophecies for the future, which is given in Opening the Doors of Heaven. The Isis astrology was not given for the day in which Isis wrote it. It was given for the day that we would find it. And that was the beginning of November 2008, when I was sent back in there and directed amongst these thousands of plates and scrolls to the correct one, and this is what we had to do, which I believe was called, you know, in the six stack of plates that I was to look at, it comes from the 16th and the 17th plates of Isis. At this time, heavens are not what they seem. For the first time, the oracles in my classes are starting to actually see through the hologram around the earth that is our heavens. Now, we've spoken a lot about this on our previous shows, but it's the first time that we're able to actually start to see the way the sky really looks. It doesn't happen all the time, but oracles have been able to see it. We hope to be able to photograph it. So next time that happens, we'll photograph it. We've photographed phenomenal things, balls of blue light coming out of the sky and down to the lake to give us the codes of the alchemy and various things like that. There's no reason why we couldn't at some point photograph the sky the way it really is. But that means there are 12 main stars around, they're actually planets that have been placed around the earth. 12 around the earth, which is the 13th within, that we're not even aware about of. Isis knew that we wouldn't be able to see them, but that they would be exerting a profound influence on us, and she wanted to give us the information for this day. So it was anciently written, but it's new. And new meaning for our day and time. Let's take a break and we'll be back.
In this, the fourth book, The Ring of Truth, which chronicles Almine's journey, she tells of the promise and the potential inherent in the resurgence of the feminine principle, increasingly felt in all aspects of current human experience. The operation of new laws governing the cosmos are explained together with the reasons for their creation. We are introduced to Mother, the primal creative energy that pervades every aspect of existence. We learn of her love and her laws and how to incorporate them into every thought and act. We are given samples of her divine language, its meaning, and its power. Mother's great gift to humanity, the healing power of Elvispada, is revealed. This new approach to dissolving disease of mind, spirit, and body replaces previously existing methodologies. Application of its techniques removes old barriers of physically oriented existence and opens a broad pathway to a life of joy and fulfillment. Discover Mother and the Ring of Truth, as well as all of Almine's books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. A Life of Miracles is a deeply inspiring and motivational book in its content. It is unique in its field in making man's relationship as the microcosm to the macrocosm understandable to both beginning and advanced readers. It's a detailed guide to living a joyous and balanced life and provides a carefully laid out map to achieving the magnificent destiny that beckons at the apex of human experience, that of ascension. If you're ready to ascend to a higher consciousness, begin each day with A Life of Miracles or any other books, CDs, lectures, workshops, or her magazine by contacting Almine at www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back. And we're happy you could join us today. We've got Rogier Chade on the phone. And Rohir, would you tell us what else you want us to look at?
Well, there are a number of strands that I would sort of just like to look at in this topic of the Isis astrology, you know, for multiple reasons, but above all, I mean, it's no small feat to really have a new astrology, and I think it's it'd be important to see how this goes, really. First of all, I was wondering about prophecy and prediction, because it's a topic I think we should talk about a little bit, for one, because it's just like on YouTube, 2012, our 2012 video is really the most popular one. On the blog, it's the prophecy and prediction entry that's the most popular one. And yet, unlike pretty much anyone else, you're saying that now prophecy and prediction is not really possible, which for one begs the question, in my mind at least, then, so Isis wrote, I mean, Isis made a prophecy about a time in which prophecy is not possible, so that's kind of paradoxical, wouldn't you think?
The prophecies that she made in the Opening the Doors of Heaven book, they are prophecies about things that will cease to exist. And that, if you can understand that, you know, duality, polarity was part of the dream. To predict things of duality that would cease to exist, for instance, maleness, femaleness, that's separation-based. You can safely predict, when you're writing this eons of life ago, that at the time of closure of polarity and duality, that beings are going to become androgynous. So there are certain things that you can predict based on seeing that a certain healing is taking place of the cosmos. However, what you're saying is that, you know, how can there be predictions and prophecies when the dictators of life are being removed? Let's take astrology. Astrology is a form of dictation as to what will be on what day. At the same time, there's three things that make that an total impossibility. Number one is that you remove all dictators, layer by layer by layer, every single day. And you can walk this journey with me by, you know, my shared entry sometimes twice a day on that diary, because there's ways in which the major light workers can help. We have a situation where there is a constant removal of that which says what is going to be, programs that are put in place, a matrix that says if step one happens, step two will follow. Those things have been removed. That's reason number one. Number two is that we are in an ascension. We are and we're not in an ascension, in that there is really, we have arrived. We are out of the dream. We are part of the infinite being. We have become very real. However, we are waking up. It's like somebody that's just been asleep, and now you're waking them up, and slowly, you know, they're kind of getting out of their grogginess and into a full awake state. So we are still waking up. If waking up is the continuation of ascension, then we are still in ascension, if that's the way we define it. But every single day, consciousness is rising a little bit higher. And yesterday's conspiracy today becomes collaboration and a cooperation. That's why it is so important for us to stay in the moment. Don't assume, because, say, let's take some governmental leader. Let's say yesterday some governmental leader behaved very poorly. It doesn't mean that today they're still that same leader, because there is this huge chance for growth. That brings me to reason number three. We are in exponential growth. If I grow, somebody in the Pleiades grows, because it's immediate everywhere where there's individuated life and so forth. he grows, now immediately I grow. So it's like a ball that ricochets back and forth between us, but there's trillions and trillions of other beings doing the same thing. So growth is very rapid and exponential. It cannot be tracked because of personal choices involved. We have opportunities to grow. We may take it or we may not. So you cannot track growth and what it will do to the future. In September, you know, I had was contacted by Sedona Journal. They said to me, please can you write an article on prophecy, and that will be in the December 08 Sedona Journal. But, you know, they were very concerned because many of the leaders, including people like Ama, who hardly ever does prophecy, were saying that the 13th of October there would be a massive depression. You know, and I'm standing there in the desert with my little flag saying, no, it won't be. But even the last week in September, I could still see that that was the immediate future, that it was an accurate prophecy. But from the time at the beginning of October, it's like the Rosh Hashanah time of reckoning, massive things were changed. It started the last few days in September, in which things were returned to humanity that were taken, things were restored to Earth and to the cosmos that were taken, including some of its major light workers that were abducted out of the cosmos because they were immortal masters to keep another cosmos alive. The restitution, the restoration, prevented it. So there's things that are constantly being done by the infinite to better life. That is a fourth component, you know, that I didn't really even think of, but it's another issue that constantly changes prophecy. And it is not the intent of the infinite that we go through massive global suffering anymore.
Now, there is really so many questions that come to mind now, but I'll just sort of go down just the first one, just going back to specifically the astrology. Now, the basic tenet of it is about self-determination. So you've mentioned the self-wheels, but I suppose this relates to certain planets which would technically be around the Earth. I mean, not the traditional pantheon, but so how does this work then? Because do they act as influencers or promoters, and how does it relate to time or location?
Well, first of all, the Earth has become, because of the presence of the infinite on this Earth, it has become the center of everything. It rotates around nothing. Part of the illusion of our space that we think we're in is that we think we're rotating around the sun. Because it's been kept in place by, at this point, no longer by the infinite's decree, but by man's belief systems. So it's still kept in place as a sub-creation by man. And this issue of sub-creations versus the perfection of creation is a topic that's quite interesting in and of itself. But everything is around us. Is it revolving around us? No, it isn't. It's stationary. I found this out during the Isis material that I translated, and then I asked the infinite if that was the case, and yes, there isn't a passage of rotation because that would create linear time again. So there's a stationary heavens, and the Earth is in the center of it. So then how does it work? There are masculine components and feminine components that are joined together into perfect, let's call it androgyny, within the 12 planets that is around us. And are the other planets also part of this astrology? My goodness, the astrology has got 72 layers to it. I have about an inch and a half to 2 inches of paperwork that comprises this website. All our websites are that informative. That's only level one. So I can day and night be writing for the next sort of year, actually, and be producing the other layers of that astrology. However, layer one deals with the primary planets, which is the 12. I'm sure layer two deals with sun and moon and all the other, but that's all we currently have. And so you have the masculine component and the feminine component inside the planet. There is a way to activate certain components in the planet that then works in cooperation with what is inside us to enhance it. Let me explain this a different way. Whatever is out there is within. We are self-determinative. The astrology doesn't determine us. We decide that today is going to be a day of good communication, say. So with the communication, there's a specific planet that deals with the communication. Its feminine part may deal with assimilation of the communication. Its masculine part might deal with the actual conveying of communication. You want both to be activated. You ask the cooperation of the planet to assist you to activate those things within, and you are the one that creates it in your environment. Let's take a commercial break, and we'll come back with some more questions and answers.
Almeen continues the exploration begun in her previous books, A Life of Miracles and Journey to the Heart of God, probing further into the nature and meaning of existence. Secrets of the Hidden Realms introduces the readers to the goddess mysteries as they apply not only to individual human lives, but to the cycles of the cosmos. From his background in the intangible functions of being, Almeen is led into the dimensions of non-humans, interacting with creatures previously known only in myth and folklore, the inner relationships of fairies, dragons, gnomes, unicorns, and other elementals, and their influence on humankind is explained. Vivid accounts of encounters with these beings and others existing as expressions of the widely divergent vibrations illustrate the essential unity of all creation. Journeying from these subtle realms, the reader is shown the ultimate expression of humanity, evolution into God-being. Secret of the Hidden Realms can be obtained from Almeen, along with her other books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com. Of intense physical preparation in January 2004, Almeen experienced a transfiguration, entering the presence of the infinite for the second time since moving into God consciousness, the state of no longer identifying with the ego, in 2000. In the weeks that followed, the powerful revelations contained in this book emerged from that all-encompassing silence. Having lost most of her linear thinking during this transition, much of this book had been written without conscious thought. This form of automatic writing, like automatic speaking she now does, flows freely from source into her own handwriting from which it was transcribed. Few have entered into God consciousness, leave the bliss to teach. Still fewer enter the stage of immortal master, and in addition, continue to function among the masses. But as a Toltec Nagual and seer, Almeen's life is dedicated to leading others to complete freedom from mortal boundaries. Journey to the Heart of God is an opportunity of a lifetime to see through the eyes of one who has encountered the indescribable realms of eternity. From such a perspective come insights that can heal the deepest wounds of alienation found in human hearts. Journey to the Heart of God contains, no matter how profound, truth. Truth that can be recognized for what it is, and it is the truth that shall set us free. Pick up a copy of The Journey to the Heart of God and discover your personal truth and freedom through Almeen's books, CDs, workshops, lectures, and magazine by logging on to www.spiritualjourneys.com.
Welcome back, and we're now in our last quarter. Ruchir, what shall we do? We've just got about 12 minutes left here.
Okay, well, there's still on the related subjects a number of questions. First of all, about the Isis astrology, when you say there are 72 layers of information, what does this even mean? I mean, is it like levels of initiation or insight or practical application, or what is it?
It's practical application. See, we've received 9 bodies of manifestation information. The first 3, there's a ring of 3 petals. It's this rose again. That's this template of creation. The ring of 3 was around it, and then there was 7, and then there was 12. And for instance, the 12 is plant magic. Incredible, incredible layers are waiting to be revealed there. Then we've got our next level, which is 20 levels, and that is mostly the incorruptible white magic, which you can find on the website, which is currently up, incorruptiblemagicwhite.com, and it's the angelic magic. It's the magic of the God Kingdom. It's the magic that you find in the Isis book and in the brand new book that will be up here in another week or so as an electronic file on our called Windows into Eternity, where you find the Father's language. And so those spoken languages is a body of that. Then beyond that, you know, you always speak about the 33 degrees of masonry and so on. Well, beyond that, you have got the alchemy, and it has, and that would be, let me see, the 6th row of petals out. This was kept by the Rosicrucians over the ages, and you had to pass 33 degrees of masonry to get into the next level of petals. And this is, of course, the information we're putting out is not the corrupted forms that the earth has ended up with. It's the ancient original source from which they got their bits and pieces of information that became corrupted. But beyond that, you've got the divine architect information, which is row 7 of the petals. The alchemy has 33 levels. The divine architect creative principles has 54 levels. Then beyond that, you have the Isis information, the 8th row of petals, and it has, as I said, 72 layers of information. Then you get, boy, this the very powerful, which, you know, we've mentioned the wheels of self, the power of source, the power of the source of creation. It has 96 layers. This is a mathematical sequence. The 3, 7, 12, 20, 33, 54, 72, 96, and then actually it ends up at 144. But this is a mathematical sequence that replaces the Fibonacci sequence in higher life. But that's why they have those specific layers. Secondly, what you've asked me is, what are the layers really? It's layers of information. You get good at one layer, you get the rest of it. And at some point, I hope that these could become our tutorials, but it's, you know, as you can hear, it's a tremendous amount of work. However, it's fascinating. And so you have layers upon layers of skill, knowledge, and application given, but no, it's not initiations.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's fascinating as well when you were first describing about these rings of bodies of information and going to the center, and then on the outside ring there is the divine architect body of information. Was that correct?
That was when we had 7 rings. We ended up with 9 rings last week.
Okay, well,
the 2 extra rings is the astrology and the source information.
Right, I see. Well, either way, I just find it very interesting to find. I mean, I think anyone would really be hard-pressed to sort of explain how seemingly diverse things such as astrology and mysticism, yes. Shamanism.
Plant magic, yes.
How they would ultimately all tie in together, and what I find so interesting, okay, so this is I'm still coming from the time when there were seven layers, but, you know, to find that the divine architect was the outside ring and not even at the core, and yet it refers to information which we, I mean, well, let me put it this way. Usually when we kind of think of Freemasonry and Rosicrucianism and the like, it kind of conjures associations of the, you know, the most advanced inner esoteric mystical magical stuff that we have, and then here we find that not only is what commonly passes for a kind of a corrupted form of what ISIS originally gave these groups, but it's also just the outer ring of something which goes into a much more exciting and powerful core.
It does indeed. And, you know, like if you take shamanism, the shamanism that's globally available today, we had a situation where we were in the class in Ohio, and one of the masters started to speak the language of this old Native American spirit that came in, and it was a woman spirit, and she was saying through her, I was translating it as rapidly as she was speaking the native language, but she was saying, please heal the ancient shamanism of the earth, because she said it became masculine and corrupted and separative. And so, you know, we've had so much pouring in, and on the Earth Wisdom Chronicles, that is more a question of some of the secrets of the earth. But on whitemagic.com, incorruptiblewhitemagic.com, we give the earth shamanism, because the earth, deep earth magic is actually what the traditional shamanism is coming from. But it's not able to be misused. And what they've currently got is a very watered-down version of it. You take something like plant magic. Plant magic, you know, there's curanderos down in South America that do nothing but work with plants. But still, if you take something like ayahuasca or you take something like marijuana and you see what it can do to man, now those are warrior plants. They're part of the four warrior plants that conquer the spirit of man. And but the plants, to use them properly, they enhance tremendously the abilities of man, not in a way that conquers his spirit and distorts his clarity, but provides doorways into abilities and powers. It's phenomenal. It's a wholly untapped source. And we've given it, but we've just barely scratched the surface. And I think half of it is on the Earth Chronicles, and the other half of it, of the plant magic, is on the whitemagic.com.
Yeah, well, as far as I can remember, I think we do own the domain name for deep earth shamanism, so perhaps one day you can put something up there. I think I'm not sure how much time there is, but I just wanted to sort of just make sure we, there's actually a few more topics, but,
we have about 3 minutes left.
Okay.
Not too much.
Let me just think. Well, it's just what you said yesterday. I mean, you said there was actually, or I think that's what you said, we had some sort of close shave or brush with the threat of financial depression again. It's gone now, you said, but I mean, what's the cosmic significance of this? What does it mean?
Well, the cosmic significance, why it happened at all, is actually that we pulled backwards in time. And where folks can find an entry on that is on today's blog. It's either today's blog or it's yesterday's blog. But I wrote exactly why we went through a really seriously wobbly time. It was the day before yesterday that we went through a very wobbly time of being, again, pre-depression, global depression financially, and how it was averted. So it was averted because the major light workers stepped up to the plate and changed themselves. This is exactly how we change the future, step by step, my beloved light family, by changing ourselves. And that is why we have done so much trouble. All of the information we've mentioned is free. We want you to walk this journey with us because it's in our overcomings within that we prevent everything that will make life not one of growth through grace, but growth through opposition. We can do it effortlessly by changing within. Now, we're at the end of our show, and we're so happy that you were with us. And, Ruchir, will you come back again next week, and we'll would love to answer some of those questions that we never got time for. So until next week, folks, and thank you again.
The Complete Power Of and the Mystical Keys series of radio programs are a part of the Premier CD set. They are available from Al Mean at www.spiritualjourneys.com. Request the entire Premier CD series set or the new book, Aruba Farina, The Book of Fairy Magic, by calling 502-499-0016 today.
We hope you've enjoyed today's show, Windows into Eternity with Al Mean. Please join us again next week.